I'm Joel Parker.
And I'm Tom McKinnon. You're tuned to Hell on Earth, Tuesday, December 14th, 2010.
Coming up, we'll hear the science behind the dangers of high fructose sugar and table sugar. And we'll go on location to the South Pole, where our own Susan Moran will talk with an expert on the cutest critter down there, penguins, and how they're being hit by climate change.
This is my sixth season here. Within that short period of time, I've seen about five or six colonies go extinct within the last five seasons, so it's pretty dramatic.
Now we turn to the last of three reports that How on Earth's Susan Moran has been bringing us from Palmer Station on Antarctica's Western Peninsula. She's there on a science journalism fellowship funded by the Marine Biological Laboratory. The peninsula is a hot spot for studying climate change because it's warming faster than any other area on Earth. Since 1950, average winter temperatures have increased by 11 degrees Fahrenheit. The most well-studied victim of climate change in this area is the Adélie penguin. This weekend, Susan spoke with Jennifer Bloom, a biologist who's studying how rising temperature and melting sea ice are affecting the penguins and the seabirds that feed on them. Let's listen to Susan's interview with Jennifer Bloom.
So I want to start by saying just what a treat it was to spend some time on one of the islands today, Torgersen, which apparently has the largest colony of some of these penguins. And just to hear the sound of some of the little chicks coming out, you know, they're all nesting. This is what, peak egg season? It was so cool. So I just think you must have one of the greatest jobs on the planet.
We hear that quite a bit around here, and some days we definitely have to pinch ourselves. It's a wonderful place to be. Palmer Station is a wonderful place to conduct research out of. Lots of good people here, and as you've seen, incredible scenery, and we get to spend time out there with the birds every day, with the penguins. So, yeah, it's definitely a very rewarding job.
Well, let's just jump in and give listeners a sense of some of these adorable sounds. And the first one, we're going to start with the sound of a chick, which probably just came out within the last couple days. And along with it, you know, there are sounds of sort of the shuffling of the rocks and others that sound, I don't know, what are they doing? What are some of the different noises?
Most of the calls you hear are Adélie adults, males and females, calling to each other. So right now, most of the birds are incubating eggs, and they've been taking turns going out to the sea to forage for food. And so when one of the mates comes back to the nest, they greet each other with this sort of standing up posture, and they weave their heads into the sky, and they make these calls that you hear.
And then some of them sound kind of hostile.
That happens too. Adélies, while they're a colonial species, they definitely have their little space. So when birds get in each other's territories, when they get in each other's nest space, sometimes they can get angry with each other, and they'll go after each other and growl and flipper bash and bite. They can be quite aggressive.
Indeed, you're looking at some pretty serious trends over the years. You've been here for a few, but you could maybe talk about this longer-term study and what you are seeing.
This is my sixth season here. I work for Dr. Bill Fraser, who is the PI, or the principal investigator, for the seabird component of the long-term ecological research site. And what that means is there's just a group of scientists here that are all studying different components of the ecosystem. So we have oceanographers studying the physical components. We have folks studying bacteria, phytoplankton, zooplankton, and then we study seabirds, higher trophic predators within the food chain. And what we've been seeing here is an incredible changes in the physical environment. A 6 degrees Celsius increase over the past 50 years of the average wintertime temperature, a huge decrease in sea ice as far as how much sea ice we get every year and the extent to which it goes out in the wintertime. And we're also seeing associated with that an increase in precipitation. So that's been reflected in our penguin populations. We've seen a huge decline in the Adélie penguin species from about 15,000 breeding pairs back in the mid-70s to less than 3,000 breeding pairs in this area today.
talk about just the difference between some of the different species? They're not all responding to climate change, you know, ice cover receding in the same way, right?
Correct. We are seeing sort of some divergent population dynamics within the three penguin species here. Historically, Gentoo penguins and chinstrap penguins were not found in this area. Adelies have been here for about 600 or 700 years, and the Gentoos didn't show up until 1994, and they started breeding on an island just outside of the Palmer area. The Gentoos are essentially moving south along the peninsula, starting to breed farther and farther south, and the Adelies here are declining. So we're seeing this particular environment becoming more favorable for a subantarctic species such as the Gentoo, and less favorable for the Adelie penguin, which is more of an Antarctic.
Boy, so different effect on different ones. Some find a niche where others cannot as well, right?
Indeed, yeah. So we're trying to figure out what else is happening in the ecosystem, not just the snow accumulation, but what's happening with the prey populations such that they are still favorable for Gentoos and not for Adelies.
So give us a sense. I know you've let us, or me anyway, follow you around to see how you're tagging and counting the eggs, counting the nesting pairs, and then the other birds we'll talk about in a bit as well. But how do you go about doing it? It looks kind of fun, and it looks really tough.
Yeah, it is pretty fun, and it's great because you don't have to search for Adelies. They're out there on the colonies, easily accessible. But we do a number of things throughout the season. We do a number of censuses to learn how many adults are initiating breeding, how many chicks eventually grow from the beginning of the season, and how many chicks fledge near the end of the season, so we can get an idea of how successful they were within one season and across seasons. And we do a number of other things. We attach satellite transmitters and dive profilers to learn where they're going to forage and what dive characteristics they're exhibiting when they're foraging for prey. We do diet sampling, a number of other things.
A little bit ago today and other days, you've let me come see how you guys remove these little candy bar size transmitters and then reattach them, and in a way that obviously allows the bird to fly. I haven't seen you do the penguins, in this case the southern giant petrel, but how do you do it without disturbing them, and then how does it actually track their whereabouts?
So yeah, we attach small satellite transmitters to giant petrels, and we also do that with the penguins during the chick rearing period, so you're just missing that. But we attach them with Tessa tape and some zip ties, and we just put it on their back, and they're quite light for giant petrels. They're about 45 grams, so they're well under their body mass. And they fly around, and they give off signals to Argos satellites, and we receive that data via email.
And you receive it via email when they're in a particular stage of their foraging, does it happen continuously?
Yes, it happens continuously. So we can see exactly where, for example, the giant petrels are feeding, perhaps south of here along the ice edge, and then they're tracked back, and we can sort of watch for them so we can retrieve that transmitter as soon as they return.
Boy, and how far is a long trip?
Boy, we've had some long petrel trips. Some of them are heading as far south as about 1,200 kilometers away. And so by the time they meander around, their trip is well over 2,000 kilometers, 3,000 total. So it's quite interesting to see how far they go.
And what about the penguins? About how far, on average, say, do the Adelies go?
On average, the penguins don't go nearly as far as the petrels. They swim out typically to what's called the Palmer Deep, which is this trench about 12 or 14 kilometers away from Palmer Station, where we have some warm water upwelling coming out of that trench, and where that warm water upwells, we see a lot of primary productivity. So as you can imagine, up the food chain, there's a lot of krill feeding there, and so a lot of krill available as prey for Adelies.
Describe any, I don't know, really close encounters that have moved you. I know you've been studying them for 6 years, or, you know, any favorite kinds of birds. I know we talked a little bit about the petrels, the ones, in fact, they don't look very nice when they're, especially the skuas, when they're hanging around ready to sabotage and kill the penguin eggs or chicks.
I think a few things for me. I typically get really excited with the skuas, both the brown skuas and the south polar skuas. We have two species that breed here.
And describe them a bit. Not being a birder myself, I didn't know what they were before I came here. I knew of them, but not really.
They look a bit like a cross between a gull and a raptor. So They're very aggressive predators, and they'll go after penguin eggs and chicks. And here, the brown skuas are slightly larger than the South Polar skuas. So for the most part, they outcompete the South Polar skuas for territorial space around penguin colonies. And they tend to get a bad rap. You know, we have tourists visit Torgerson Island, and even station folks, you know, will see a brown skua take a penguin egg and chick, and they'll feel very sad. But the predators have to eat, too. Exactly. And if you see a skua chick, you tend to change your mind. They have incredibly cute chicks. So they have a special place in my heart for sure. But the other side of things is just seeing how rapidly the Adelies have declined within the this is my sixth season here, within that short period of time. I've seen about five or six colonies go extinct within the last five seasons, so it's pretty dramatic.
Does anything give you hope?
That's a good question. I mean, I think on the science side of things, there's always more questions to answer, and there's always new ways to look at what's happening within the ecosystem here. You know, I'm not sure I'm entirely hopeful for the Adelies as a species if our planet continues to warm.
I want to close by bringing listeners back to Torgerson Island.
That was Susan Moran speaking with Jennifer Bloom, a biologist who has spent the last six austral summer seasons at Palmer Station in Antarctica. The easiest way to learn more is by Googling Palmer LTER. That's for long-term ecological research. Under scientific research, you'll find seabird research information. Learn more about Susan's adventures at onearth.org/author/smoran and at her personal website, susankmoran.com.
That's all for this edition of How on Earth. Tim Morton wrote our theme music. Tom Wasinger produced it. Additional music by Sugar.
Our website is hoe.kgnu.net. You can also find it through the main kgnu.org website. Questions? Comments? Call the KGNU comment line at 303-447-9911. For How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show, I'm Tom McKinnon.
And I'm Joel Parker.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Independent Power Systems, offering end-to-end solar electric system design and installation. IPS is hosting an informational meeting on Thursday, January 13th, at their North Boulder location, 1501 Lee Hill Road, in Boulder at 6:30 p.m. More information is online at solarips.com or call 303-443-0115.